Chapter 6.
Well, one thing is for sure,
Kandara noted as we approached the shallows of the new island.
This place doesn't look like anything I've ever heard of before.
The golden-haired Morpho was right. The closer we got to this strange island, the more and more I thought it had been ripped straight out of the pages of a National Geographic magazine. The sandy beach was nothing but a narrow strip that ran around the perimeter of the land. But once you got a few paces inland, it slowly started to morph into a somewhat flat, grassy landscape. There wasn't much flora from what I could see, save for a bunch of extremely tall trees, whose branches and leaves were exclusively reserved for the very top of the structure. Every now and again there would be a patch of bushes or brambles, but otherwise this looked like some sort of savanna. Seriously, the only thing missing was the rising sunset and someone belting out the Circle of Life. We anchored our ship in the shallows, and those of us without wings climbed overboard and down into one of our rowboats. Next, we headed up to the beach, grounded our small vessel, and then got out to start exploring. At the same time, Tyrion and Kandara fluttered down and landed beside us.
It would probably be a wise decision to continue on foot,
Jonas noted to the two flying creatures.
The less conspicuous we can make ourselves, the better.
Honestly, Jonas, I said, as I surveyed the grasslands, I'm not really seeing the whole danger of this island. Like, I thought we weren't going to be able to walk 10 feet without running into something that could kill us.
Don't speak too soon, Draco Rex, the soothsayer warned. The reputation of this island is quite well known. I wouldn't relax until we actually know what we're dealing with.
Speaking of which, I said, as I looked at my non-existent watch, we probably only have a few hours of daylight remaining. I don't know about you guys, but after all that rocking and rolling in the whirlpools, I think I want to get settled in for the night sooner rather than later.
I second that, Jonas nodded. The last thing we want is to be out here at night, when we don't know what sorts of creatures might be lurking around.
Ugh.
Nadir scoffed with a wave of her hand.
Most of us here can already see in the dark, so I am not too worried.
And I'm sure we aren't the only creatures around here that can see in the dark, which is why it's all the more important for us to find shelter immediately.
Shall we start gathering up wood to build a beach shelter? Ooh!
Nima giggled as she placed her hands on her mouth.
Sleeping on the beach is always fun.
Well, not the beach. I shook my head. For starters, there's hardly any beach to begin with. Also, Jonas is right. This island is much different than the ones we're used to. And I've watched enough nature documentaries to know you don't want to be standing around in the middle of a savanna during the night.
Why do you suggest we build a shelter then, Draco Rex?
Daria questioned, with her arms crossed against her chest. Those trees. I pointed off in the distance, toward the closest set of high-branched trees I could identify. Those should be high enough off the ground to keep us away from predators, but not inaccessible to any of our crew members.
How does one even go about building a camp up in a tree?
Zarya pondered aloud. Ask the experts. I winked as I motioned to Kandara and Nima. Their people literally lived in trees their whole lives.
It's actually not that difficult. All you have to do is weave up a bunch of long sticks between the branches and then you build on top of that.
You think a bunch of sticks will hold George and Tyrion?
Zarya asked with a raised eyebrow.
Make them big sticks?
Nima shrugged. That shouldn't be hard to do. If there's one thing this island isn't lacking, it's these trees. I think we should start cutting down some branches, and then we can start bringing them back here and organizing them into platforms. My crew spent the next 2 hours wandering around to the different tall trees and hacking off their limbs. It was a fairly straightforward process, actually. One or two of us would climb up the trees, find a branch we thought was sturdy enough to hold our weight, and lop it off using our weapon of choice. Then, once all of our chosen branches had fallen, we would descend and carry them back to our main base. Tyrion then carried the heavy logs up to the top of the tree, where he would lay them into place before Kandara came around and fastened them together using her throat silk. Kandara and Nima acted as our supervisors, since they both had experience in building these sorts of things, and they dedicated which branches went where, the number of platforms needed, and the like. Daria and Zarya, however, were our treehouse experts. They reminisced fondly about the secret treehouse they'd built with their father as they moved around branches and ordered them put into certain spots. When all was said and done, we'd turned the simple high-branched tree into our own private paradise. Or, more appropriately, we'd made it into a large platform that could support the weight of us all and would hopefully keep us away from predators in the middle of the night. Just then, my stomach seemed to turn in on itself.
Oh, damn,
I grumbled as I patted my belly. I didn't realize building a treehouse could use up so much energy. I'm starving.
Me too,
Mira agreed.
Should we go back to the ship and pick up a barrel of jerky?
No, I shook my head. Those are the ship's provisions. We'll need those if we get lost at sea, or if we would, for some reason, have to extend the journey any longer. If we want to eat here on this island, we're going to have to find food ourselves.
Gemma would be proud of your stinginess.
Tyrion snickered to me privately. Who wants to join me on a foraging party? I chuckled as I raised my hand up into the air.
Me!
Nima raised her hand instantly.
I'll go too.
Kandara shrugged.
I wanted to explore the unique flora and fauna of this area anyway.
Ha! That's the spirit. I chuckled and then turned to the rest of the crew. In the meantime, I want you guys to keep setting up camp. Get a small fire going and see if you can get some shelters up too. Hopefully we'll be back soon with something to eat.
A fire up in the trees?
Daria mused.
How will that be possible, Dracorex?
You just have to keep it small,
Kandara explained.
Try to make it mostly hot coals and ash. That'll give you the warmth you need without posing a risk to anyone's safety.
You really do know what you're doing,
the golden-scaled warrior twin noted with a smile.
We'll be sure to follow your advice.
We'll try not to go too far, I announced to my crew. If anything crazy happens in the meantime, have Tyrion fly around and find us, okay? A wave of understanding nods answered me. So I turned and headed to the trunk of the tree. Then I pulled out my sea glass sword, stabbed it into the trunk as far as it would go, and jumped. Gravity sent me careening downward toward the ground 100 feet below, but my sturdy sword slowed me down immensely. I held on for dear life as I slid down the tree like a pirate through a sail, and eventually my feet slammed into the grassy ground with a soft thud. Nima was right behind me, and I looked up to see the red-haired Nerolope descending the tree with the grace of a gymnast. She had all four of her appendages clasped around the tree, but she moved them in a strange pattern in which she would lower the limbs on her right side and then follow up instantly with the ones on her left. The process was quick, and soon Nima's feet were planted firmly on the ground beside me. Kandara fluttered down not long after, and the golden-haired Morpho woman was all smiles. Her green wings folded in and out in rapid, happy flicks, and in her right hand she held a leather-bound book. Is that a field journal? I questioned with a grin.
It is.
Kandara nodded.
I figured I could try to make one for every new island we visit. That way, I can keep expanding my knowledge, and it'll give Isla something new to put in the archives when I'm done.
Oh, she'll love you for that. The only new things Isla has been able to put in our archives are the religious myths of the women I bring back to the island. Just ask this one here.
It's true.
Nima agreed with a firm, wide-eyed nod.
When the Nerolope women first came to Ben's Island, Isla sat us all down and talked to us for hours about our stories and gods. She wrote every single word we said down into a book like that, too.
Then this will be one more thing that will go into the Dragonkin's history. Consider it my first real contribution as a member of your people, Draco Rex.
It's much appreciated, I promised the green-winged beauty. Now, let's go and see if we can find some grub. We started with the most obvious source of food we could think of, the bushes. As we approached the large, unkempt patches of green, we noticed the branches and vines were completely covered with thick, sharp spikes. But in between each of those spines was a small black orb that oozed juices and appeared squishy to the touch. A berry. Do you think we could eat that? I asked my friends as I leaned in close to inspect.
No clue,
Kandara admitted as she scribbled something down into her notebook.
But they look pretty appetizing.
It's worth a shot, I shrugged. I'll at least bring them back to the group and see if anyone thinks they could be useful. With that, I slowly reached into the bush, and I was careful to avoid any of the pointed spikes. My fingers felt around on the branch until they touched the soft, squishy flesh of the berry, and then I carefully plucked the berry from its vine, turned around to Kandara, and placed it inside of her satchel, right next to the wind dragon egg. Mima got in on the action as well, and soon we had a good amount of these strange berries. When all was said and done, though, it felt like we had put in a bunch of work for next to nothing of a reward.
There are still a lot more berries on this bush. Should we keep going?
Nah. I waved my hand dismissively. We've wasted enough daylight on these. We should move on.
Move on to where?
Kandara asked as she gestured around.
There's nothing really around us other than bushes and trees.
Yeah, I know. I rubbed my neck as I let out a deep sigh. This island might be a good place to incubate an egg, but it's not really doing much for me in terms of... Before I could finish my sentence, my ears picked up the sound of a short, high-pitched chirp. I looked around at the two women and then opened my mouth to speak, but Kandara quickly threw her finger up to her lips and shook her head. The chirping sound repeated itself, though it echoed across the plains much louder this time around. Kandara continued to hold her finger up to her lips, but she slowly began to walk in the direction of the peculiar sound. Nima and I followed the Morpho woman through the grassy landscape, until we finally arrived at the side of a small hill. We were further away from our friends than I'd hoped we'd be, but it was all worth it when I saw what was on the other side. There, down at the foot of the grassy hill, was a small pond with several creatures gathered around it. There were 6 creatures in total, and all of them chirped as they drank from the water before them. They were about the size of a pony, with equally equestrian snouts and 4 stubby legs. However, unlike horses I'd seen before, the feet on these things came out into 3 equal-sized digits that were dug firmly into the dirt. Their fur was a soft rose color, and I noticed they all had a strange snake-like appendage that grew out of the back of their necks. "We could definitely eat one of those," I whispered to the two women.
"They'd be very easy to kill as well. We have the high ground and they are all distracted. I could easily pick one of them off with my bow and arrow."
"Then let's do it.
If we bring back a whole miniature horse, our crewmates will love us forever."
"I could probably snag one too,"
Kandara said, as she put away her journal and drew her fan blade.
"It would only be one, however, since I'd have to get in close for the kill."
"Why not both?" I shrugged. "Nima can take down one with her bow, and Kandara can do it her way. Meanwhile, I'll just sit back and watch you two get to work."
"Wow,"
Kandara teased.
"You're not going to try and kill one?"
"I don't know. 2 will be enough to feed our whole crew, but 3? That's just overkill."
"Oh, ha-ha."
The golden-haired butterfly woman rolled her eyes and then prepared for takeoff.
"Which one do you want, Nima?"
"I'll let you take the one closest, since you'll have to get in close,"
the red-haired Nerolope offered.
"I'll do the one on the far left. That little guy's got half his head in the water."
Nima slid her bow off her shoulder and drew forth an arrow. She placed it against the taut string, pulled it back, and then closed one eye as she took aim. Meanwhile, Kandara crouched down as if she were a sprinter waiting for the gun to go off.
"On 3?
Kandara suggested.
1, 2, 3.
Nima counted down without taking her eyes off the target. When the 3 left her mouth, both of the women sprang into action. Nima released her arrow and the wooden projectile rocketed across the grassy landscape, as if it had been shot out of a cannon. It only took a few seconds to reach its mark, and then there was a burst of blood as the arrow pierced the creature's brain. The other pony animals suddenly snapped to attention and looked in the direction of the commotion. That's when Kandara struck. The Morpho woman looked like a blur as she propelled herself down the side of the small hill with her fan blade held out like Superman. She quickly zipped past the nearest horse creature, and a crimson mist erupted out from its throat as the spines of Kandara's blade sliced open its throat. Now that 2 of their friends had been killed, the rest of the horse-like creatures went into a panic. They chirped and stomped their feet momentarily, before they turned around and high-tailed it out of there as quickly as they could. Still, it didn't matter. The deed was done, and now we had 2 kills we could take back to camp.
"Way to go, guys!" I praised my 2 friends.
"I just hope those things aren't too heavy. We strayed pretty far away from our camp, after all."
"They won't be too heavy, especially once we dress them."
"Dress them? We're going to put them in clothes?"
No. "We're going to cut out all their internal organs so the meat doesn't start going bad before we can get it back. It's a way to make sure the meat doesn't spoil as quickly."
"It'd also be a wise way to keep other predators away from our camp. If we cut out these creatures' organs and then scatter them down here at the watering hole, the scent of the rotting flesh will attract nearby predators."
"And if they're focused on these things, they won't pay attention to us," I agreed as I drew my pink stone knife. "Now, let me show you guys how it's done. You both have a dagger, right?" Both of the women reached down to their waist and drew the same sea glass dagger that was standard issue for all of my subjects.
"Of course,"
Nima smiled.
"You made a big deal about training us how to use them, and it was so much fun."
Once I knew they were ready, I began to make my way down the side of the hill, down to the 2 bodies that littered the watering hole. I motioned for the 2 women to gather around the first body, the one that currently had Nima's arrow through its brain. Then I knelt down, flipped the creature over onto its back, and placed my dagger against its throat.
I really, really hope this is like the animals I hunted back home, I chuckled. The thought made me pause for a moment. For all I knew, this thing could be filled with toxic gases that would erupt when I cut it open. Still, I was never one to let the fear of the unknown get the best of me. The blade of the pink stone knife cut through the creature's flesh like a hot knife through butter. So I made an incision all the way down to the bottom of his body. Then, once I was sure I'd cut all the way through his muscle, I reached inside his still warm chest and pried him open like a walnut. Finally, I stood up, went around so my legs were over his head, and then picked him up by his front legs. As I did so, his internal organs slopped out onto the ground with a wet hiss of steam. Though I could recognize several of the shapes I saw in the pile of viscera, there were a few organs I'd never seen before in my life. Then again, that was to be expected. I had no idea what the hell this creature was or where it came from, or what sort of things it ate. All I knew was it had meat on its bones, and it was the only thing living around here as far as the eye could see.
You have to reach inside of it to pull out the organs?
Kandara tilted her head to the side. Yep, I stated with a puffed out chest. Does that make you have second thoughts?
The opposite.
The Morpho's eyes lit up.
That makes me want to do it even more. What better way to learn about the creature than to cut it open and see what's on the inside?
Okay. Now I was starting to wonder if I should be worried about Kandara. But as long as she didn't start talking about eating its liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti, I think we'd be all right. I watched the women as they both circled the second creature's body.
Would you like to do the honors?
Nima offered her knife to Kandara, but the Morpho refused.
You can do the first part. I mostly just want to observe so I can sketch out the organs. Your hobby is such a cool one,
Nima told Kandara with a grin.
I'm still trying to figure out what mine is. For a while, I thought it might be archery, but then I realized Gemma was already so much better than I was. So, you can have hobbies you aren't the best at. Trust me, the actual drawings in my journals are terrible. I'll be surprised if anyone can even make out what they're supposed to be down the line.
Don't be so hard on yourself, I reassured the butterfly woman. You're already the best damn zoologist or animal expert I know.
I'm the only zoologist you know,
the green-winged woman scoffed. True, but that makes you the best by default, I winked. Nima got down on her knees, bent over the second horse creature, and then sliced it open with her sea glass blade. The second it had been opened up, Kandara hopped over beside the Nirilope woman and started to sketch out what she saw. She continued to draw as Nima pulled the guts out of the corpse, plopped them onto the ground, and then gagged.
Ugh, ew,
the red-haired Nirilope whispered.
I didn't realize it was going to be this messy.
Oh, that's why I'm not doing it myself. I didn't want to get blood and guts all over my beautiful artwork.
Once we were all done with our dressing, Nima and I both wandered over to the small pond, got down on the shoreline, and then rinsed the blood off our hands.
Is this how it always goes on your journeys?
Nima asked, as she stared off into the distance.
Because I'm having a great time so far.
I wish I could say yes. I sighed as I scrubbed my hands clean. It's all fun and games right now, but trust me, shit's gonna hit the fan before it's all said and done. Jonas keeps warning us about this island, so I'm just waiting to see what kind of dangerous crap is gonna come our way.
The danger is part of the fun, though, right?
No. I shook my head. The danger's the worst part. Sure, it's a huge adrenaline rush when it's over, but in the moment, all you can really think about is whether or not you're gonna come out the other side alive. Remember when your people were terrorized by the orcs?
Oh, yes.
Nima nodded firmly.
Those were dark times.
Well, that's how it feels when you're facing down a dragon, or an orc captain, or anything that's out here in the wild.
I see,
the freckle-faced Nirilope noted.
Gemma and the deer always make it sound like they have so much fun on these adventures, though.
Well, they can be fun. Actually, yeah, they are a lot of fun, but they're also really dangerous and important. The two kind of go hand in hand, if you think about it. Nima pondered my words for a moment, before she stood up from her position and wiped her wet hands off onto her clothes.
Either way, I'm already having a great time.
She smiled at me.
And I can't wait to see what the rest of the journey has in store for us.
Me too, Nima. Me too. Once we were done with our impromptu hand hygiene session, I walked back over to the carcasses of the pony creatures, and without another moment's hesitation, I reached down, grabbed the animal by its hind legs, and then slung it over my shoulder. Surprisingly, now that the organs had been removed, the creature didn't feel any heavier than a sack of potatoes you'd buy at the grocery store. And I glanced back over my shoulder and saw Kandara and Nima were tag-teaming the second pony, with Nima on the back legs and Kandara in the front. We carefully made our way back to the tree where we'd established our camp, and when we finally arrived, I called out to Tyrion. "Hey, buddy." I spoke to the dragon telepathically. "We've got a special delivery for the camp, but it's kind of hard to climb up with our hands full."
"I'll be right down,"
the silver dragon promised me. Within seconds of our conversation, Tyrion's large figure appeared over the side of the tree, and he beat his silvery leather wings as he floated down to us, and then outstretched his taloned feet to take our gifts. "Here you go," I chuckled as I handed over the pony creature. "I'm not sure what this is exactly, but I bet it'll make for some good roasted meat." Tyrion took the two animals from our possession, gripped them tightly in his claws, and then bowed his head. Kandara sputtered as she reached out to pet Tyrion.
"Good dragon?"
"I'm offering you guys a lift, though I will always and forever appreciate the head scratches."
"He wants us to hop on," I explained to the two women.
"We can go for a dragon ride. Count me in."
The Nerelope woman bounced up and down as she dashed over to Tyrion and then tossed a long, slender leg over his neck. I sauntered over to the dragon and hopped up onto his back as well. Nima's body was now pressed close against mine, and I used every trick from my middle school grade book to keep myself from getting an erection. Of course, it didn't work. Nima let out a gasp as my cock grew stiff against her tight ass, but she didn't say a word.
"I think I'm good,"
Kandara said as she pointed to her wings.
"I'll see you all up there."
With that, Kandara's green wings began to flap, and she rose up into the sky. Tyrion lifted off the ground immediately after, and we soon found ourselves back at the top of the tall tree. "Wow," I gasped audibly when I saw what had happened in the short amount of time we'd been gone. The three of us had only been out hunting for a few hours, but it looked like my crewmates made excellent use of the time we'd been gone. There was now a small fire flickering at the center of the camp, and it was just as Kandara had suggested, mostly smoldering coals and only a small hint of actual flame. All around the fire were small wooden bed frames that had been lashed together with pieces of rope, and over on one of the thicker branches there was a platform specifically for our dragon companions.
"Do you like what we've done with the place?"
Mira joked when she saw my surprise.
"It's not the castle, but it'll do."
"What do you mean it'll do?" I shook my head with surprise. "This is fantastic."
"But it's still missing one central component,"
Nadir giggled as she strutted over.
"The delicious food, which is what I'm assuming you brought with you."
"We did," I nodded. "We actually caught two animals."
"You got meat,"
Lazan gasped with delight.
"We all thought you were just going to come back with nuts and berries."
"It was looking that way at first, but there was a little watering hole down the side of that hill over there. Nima and Kandara took two of the beasts down, and then we cleaned them and brought them back for everyone to enjoy. And enjoy them we did. The rest of my crew helped me skin the creatures, debone them, and then cut off the chunks of meat that looked like they'd be good to eat. Lazan and Nadir dug right into the raw hunks of flesh, and they made noises of ecstasy as they gulped down the mystery animal.
"I don't know what this creature is called,"
Lazan cooed.
"But we need it on the Dragonkin Island."
"I agree,"
Nadir nodded.
"Maybe we could do like we did with the clucker boards. We could capture some of these creatures and bring them back home."
"One step at a time," I laughed as I took some of the meat in my hands. "We've got about four other issues we need to solve before we can even start to worry about bringing back this mystery creature to our island." Those of us who didn't enjoy raw meat tossed the hunks of flesh onto the glowing coals and then let them grill for a few minutes. Even though the fire was small, it was very hot, and the meat seemed to cook through in a matter of minutes. So I carefully picked up the piece of meat, brushed off the remnants of ash, and popped it into my mouth. It was very chewy meat, with a hint of gamey flavor, but it was still pretty damn good, all things considered. Maybe Nadir and Lazan were right. If we had a few of these back on the Dragonkin Island, Holly could play around with all sorts of recipes. And if anyone could make this stuff into a culinary masterpiece, it would be Holly. As we sat around munching on our campfire dinner, the world around us seemed to finally come alive. Howls, growls, and roars emerged out from the darkness around us, and I distinctly heard the sounds of creatures pacing around the ground below. When I looked out over the edge of our platform, a shiver shot down my spine. There were about 10 pairs of glowing yellow eyes staring up at me. One thing was for sure, I was very, very glad we decided to set up camp up here.
Now, do you see why this island has a reputation? If we were down on the ground, we'd have probably been torn to bits already, and those are not even the dragons.
I just can't believe how different this place feels in the nighttime.
Mira shuddered.
This doesn't feel like the same island we were on a few hours ago.
Nocturnal predators. That would also explain why so many of the creatures were hidden during the day. This island is mostly active at night.
Thank goodness these guys weren't nocturnal. I joked as I held up a hunk of roasted meat. I don't think I'd be a happy camper if all I had to sustain myself was a few nuts and berries.
We still have all this stuff back on the ship,
Zarya reminded me. Seeing how the island is at night, I'm even more glad we didn't bring it. Could you imagine how desperate those things down there would be if they knew we had a barrel full of fish up here with us? At least with this mystery meat, it'll be gone in the next hour or so, and the smell will go away with it.
You don't think those things down there can climb trees, do you?
Nima asked with fear in her eyes.
If they could, I think they'd already be up here.
My crew spent the next hour or two sitting around the campfire, chatting it up, sharing stories and playing verbal riddle games. Finally, once it got to be a bit later, the Sandman seemed to hit all at once. One by one, my friends began to pass out on their bed frames, and soon everyone was asleep but Nima and I.
I don't know why I'm not tired,
the freckled Nerolope noted.
Maybe it's just because I'm enjoying your company so much.
I'm pretty tired. But yeah, I'm having a good time. And I don't want to call it quits just yet. Still, I don't want to stay up too late. We have a long journey ahead of us in the morning. Or maybe not. I'm still kind of confused as to what we need to do with this wind dragon egg.
Worry about that in the morning,
Nima suggested with a smile.
For now, just revel in this moment.
This moment? I snickered as I pointed at the snoring crewmates beside us.
No.
Nima's eyes grew narrow.
This moment, when the two of us are alone. That has never happened before, you know.
I thought about it for a second and quickly realized that she was right. Even though I'd known Nima for quite some time now, this was the first time we'd ever really been one-on-one. Before I knew what happened, I felt the Nerolope woman's soft hand reach over and lay against mine. I guess we haven't been alone before. Is there some reason that's special?
Oh, don't play dumb, Dracorex.
Nima grinned.
I want you. Just like all the other Nerolope women want you. I want you to fill me with your seed and give me a baby.
My cock began to throb inside of my pants, but I had to try and think with my other head for once. Nima, as much as I want to do that with you, look around. There are a lot of people here who could wake up at any second and catch us in the act.
But they won't.
Nima purred.
Not if we're quiet.
In one swift motion, Nima flipped her body around so she was straddling my dick. Then she pressed her finger up against my lips and made a shushing sound, and I felt like I was about to melt into the bed behind me. Why was it always the shy, innocent ones who were also the naughtiest? Either way, I wasn't going to argue. Nima pressed her soft lips against mine, and we kissed passionately as our hands began to explore each other's bodies. My fingers slid down into her gown and cupped her tight little ass as her fingers trailed along my chest. Then Nima pulled back and gave one last look around to see if anyone was awake. When the coast was clear, she bit her lip, stared me down hungrily, and then opened up the front of her gown to reveal her breasts. They might have been fairly small, but they were still fucking fantastic. Each of her tiny breasts had a thick pink nipple that was already erect, and they were covered with the same adorable freckles that were on Nima's face. I instantly leaned into the Nerolope woman's chest and gave each nipple a light suck. Nima's body tensed up in response, but she didn't make a single sound. Instead, she just ran her fingers through my hair as I teased, licked, and softly nibbled on her nipples, one at a time. She must have felt how hard I was, though, because Nima's eyes grew wide as she reached down toward the waistband of my pants. The red-haired Nerolope shifted her weight as she gently pulled my pants down a few inches, just enough to reveal my rock-hard manhood. Next, Nima wrapped her hand around my cock and began to stroke it tenderly. A wave of ecstasy shot through my body. Oh, this was so hot, I wanted to moan as loudly as I could to tell Nima how sexy she was and how much I loved what she was doing to my cock. But I didn't dare make a sound. The sexy deer woman licked her lips as she stroked me off. She used her thumb to wipe up a bit of pre-cum off my cock's head, and then she slid the finger into her mouth and sucked it sensually. The sight made my balls tighten, and I probably could have come right then and there. But I stayed the course. I knew the best was still yet to come. Nima finally let go of my cock, and she reached down and undid her clothing, until the fabric fell away to reveal the pink slit between her legs. It was already wet with excitement, and a small bit of silky pubic hair sat atop her swollen clitoris. Without another second to waste, Nima picked herself up, positioned her pussy over my erection, and then slid down onto me slowly. Her mouth opened wide in shock as she took me all in, and the Nerolope's green eyes rolled back into her head. Nima bit down on her fist as she continued down on my cock, and for a second I thought she was going to let out a sound and blow our cover. Hell, I thought I was going to do that when I felt myself bottom out inside of her. Nima's pussy was very wet and very tight, and the sight of her petite pelvis pressed up against mine made my balls tighten with glee. The freckle-faced beauty then began to slowly bounce up and down on my cock, and her tiny little breasts jiggled with each motion she made. I reached up and teased Nima's nipples with one hand, while I gripped her small, firm ass with the other. The warm coil inside my stomach started to tighten as I watched her grind against my manhood, and I didn't know how much longer I could take this. One of two things was going to happen. Either I would blow my load very soon, or I was going to accidentally make a noise that could alert the others. Then I decided to go with option number C. Nima was rocking my world, so I figured it was time to rock hers. I threw both my hands around the petite Nerolope's waist and then began to use my pelvic muscles to thrust in and out of her from below while I pulled her down harder onto me. Nima's eyes went wide at the sudden change in movement, and she opened her mouth to moan. However, she was able to hold back her sounds of pleasure, and all that escaped was a soft whimper. The freckled beauty placed her hands against my abs as I pounded into her softly, and it wasn't long before her pussy started to spasm against me. The Nerolope woman looked me dead in the eyes, opened her mouth, and then mouthed the words,
"I'm close,"
to me. The thought of this sexy deer woman coming on my cock made me all the more excited, so I squeezed Nima's waist harder and started to move a little faster. Nima's whole body tensed up, and she threw back her head as her nails dug into my shirt. Suddenly, the woman went stiff, and her pussy began to spasm like crazy. She let out a few soft, pitiful whimpers as she orgasmed around my dick. But that was enough to send me over the edge. I shoved Nima down onto my erection as far as she could go, and then unloaded my seed into her waiting womb like a geyser. We stared into each other's eyes as we came together, and we stayed locked there silently as I pumped what felt like a pint of creamy baby batter into her. Then, after Nima's hungry little pussy had squeezed every last dollop out of me, she collapsed against my chest.
"Did you like that?" I whispered into her ear.
"Oh, yes. Did you?"
She gave me a soft kiss on the cheek as she pulled my pants back up and then began to fumble with her own garments.
"Of course. You can feel how much I liked it by how much of my seed I poured into you."
"It's a lot,"
she purred into my ear.
"It's warm and deep inside of me. I'm clenching my womanhood to keep it all inside. I knew you wouldn't spoil our game."
"We'll have to do this again sometime soon." I winked at the woman in my arms. "Maybe when we can actually make all the noise we want."
"Oh, where's the fun in that? I was thinking we could go even more stealthy next time."
"Holy shit. Never in my wildest dreams would I have guessed Nima was such a freak in the sack. Either way, I was kind of into it." Nima and I cuddled close to each other as we stared up at the stars through the canopy of the tree. And if I ignored the howls and growls of the bloodthirsty predators out there in the dark, it was actually a very beautiful night. The stars were out in full, and there was a certain air about us lying there in our makeshift treehouse, away from everything else in the world. Soon my eyes grew heavy, and I found myself drifting off to sleep. The next thing I was aware of were the hands of Jonas as he shook me out of my slumber.
Draco Rex! Wake up, Draco Rex!
I groggily sat up in my bed and rubbed at my eyes as I tried to get a handle on what was going on, but I quickly broke out of my haze when I realized all of my crewmates were standing over at the edge of the treehouse with their weapons drawn and at the ready.
What the fuck is going on, Jonas?
I demanded, as I hopped up and pulled my sword out from its sheath.
We've got company, and by the looks of it, they are not friendly.
Great. That was just what we needed. I tightened my grip on my sword and made my way over to the edge of the platform. But when I peered down onto the ground below, I could hardly believe my eyes. There, at the foot of the tall tree, were 10 women with various shades of gray skin. They were adorned in some sort of skimpy tribal attire made up of tattered leather and wraps around their arms and legs. And in their hands was a variety of weapons, mostly bows and short swords. What stood out the most about these women, however, were the giant curved horns that sat at the very center of their foreheads. Were these rhino women? Strangely enough, that wasn't even the weirdest part about the situation. All of these rhino women were mounted warriors, but they weren't riding horses, or elephants, or even rhinos themselves. These rhino women were mounted atop giant ants. Ants that had large, flat heads with two big pinchers at the top of their noggins that looked like deadly TV antennas.
Identify yourselves immediately and come down here,
a rhino woman with white hair commanded.
If you come down peacefully, we will promise your deaths will be swift. But so help me, if you make us bring you down by force, you will all die slow, painful deaths. The choice is yours.